Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Music, we have an announcement to make on the Savage Nation. There is no truth to the rumor that Obama, as a result of the plane going down in New York, there is absolutely no truth that Obama is considering beginning a Department of Gooseland Security. And there's also no truth to the rumor that Al Gore will demand that all commercial airline flights be eliminated in America to protect the migratory pattern of the Canadian goose. This is getting more ridiculous by the minute. I mean, you got a hero pilot who no one has seen, and you've got a moron for a mayor of New York who's crowding the airwaves as though he had something to do with saving the passengers. He ought to be ashamed of himself. Now they're pretending that it wasn't geese, even though the government reported that earlier. Now he's making, it wasn't geese, but we can guarantee you we don't know it wasn't a Homeland Security issue, but we'll investigate and let the, they're trying to show you how important government is. Government isn't worth jack. It was a pilot with the guts to land the plane in the Hudson River, and it was people on boats who rescued the people. It had nothing to do with these fraudulent thieves standing on the screens now hamming it up. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this government media complex. I'm sick of it. And the idiots in the media who were covering it earlier were beyond comprehension. Neil Cavuto was hysterical. Wolf Blitzer was hysterical. They didn't know what they were talking about.
Oh, New York is a big city. For those of you who don't live in New York, it's quite a big city. It has several airports.
Oh, my God, it's getting worse by the day. So I'm going to talk about the Obama inauguration. It's the most expensive in history. Well, that's an example of a man of the people. And he's got to make up for past generations where they couldn't have inaugurations. I understand that. And in order to make up for past generations that couldn't have inaugurations, they have to have the biggest inauguration in history, more like a coronation, and not call it a coronation, just call it a celebration to make up for past sins. But it turns out that Californians led the pack among big donors. Ooh, I wonder why. Let's look at the names of the people who gave $50,000 or more. Some of the Californians who have made $50,000 contributions to Barack Obama's upcoming coronation include Halle Berry, actor, Jamie Foxx, actor, Berry Gordy, record producer, Carol Shorenstein Hayes, whoever she is, San Francisco. I think she's related to a real estate mogul. Sharon Stone, actor? I don't know where she gets the money from. It could be Phil's money. Who knows? Robert Haas of Levi Strauss. Now, there's a company that once could make a dungaree. Today, they can't make a pair of jeans that anyone wants, but boy, do they have good employee benefits. Here's a strange one. Mitchell Kurtzman, Hummer Windblad Venture Partners, Mill Valley. Now, why would Mitchell Kurtzman in Mill Valley, New York, Mill Valley, California, want to go to the inauguration so badly that he'd pay $50,000 to get in? Have no idea. Here's another one, Michael Kishnick, Working Assets Long Distance Palo Alto. What do these people want? I have no idea. George Lucas, producer, San Rafael. Jamie McCourt, Los Angeles Dodgers, Los Angeles. Now, here's a cute one, Agua Caliente Band of Coahuila Indians, Palm Springs. I think we can pretty much figure out why they gave $50,000 to go to the inauguration. David and Georgia Osborne, it says unemployed, Los Gatos, is that a joke? Ellen Pau, Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield and Byers, venture capital firm, San Francisco, Kate and Steven Spielberg, DreamWorks, SKG, Los Angeles. Let's hope that their investment in Obama is better than their investment with Madoff. Steven Swig, Presidio School of Management, San Francisco is going. And some other people you never heard of have paid over $50,000 in order to go see Obama be coronated. There's another main story that I want to talk about in the Savage Nation, which is this. And it's a very important story because the propaganda is so out of control that somebody has to straighten you out on all of it. And it's fallen upon my shoulders to do so. And that is this. Although the homosexual propaganda is at the highest level in the history of the world, where you think that the guys just hug each other and kiss each other and, oh, they're into decoration and things of that nature, and they're all good and nice, I'm sorry to inform you that the CDC just released a report that says 65% of all the syphilis cases in the United States are accounted for by homosexual men, making that group the primary driver of increased syphilis rates. Now, why is it important that I tell you about homosexuality and syphilis? Because Obama wants to eliminate don't ask, don't tell in the military and turn it into do ask, do tell. And I think that if we're going to have do ask, do tell, that we should look at the entire picture. And if you want open homosexuality in the military, you're going to have rampant disease spreading in the military. I'm telling you, this is a shame to not talk about this and to sweep it under the rug and make it all what it isn't. I want to ask you a question. Is there a reason all religions shun homosexual activity? There is not one religion on earth that encourages homosexual activity. You understand why? Because the ancients understood that homosexual activity usually leads to very serious social consequences, none of which are good for the society that promulgates this activity. Now, I know many of you listen to this show, and you have your teenage children listening to this show, The Savage Nation, because you feel that it's an informational step for your child in that the media hides most reality from them. And so, therefore, there's a great article from CNS News that I'm going to talk about. I linked it up on michaelsavage.com, and I want to read it to you. The federal CDC says homosexual men accounted for 65% of the nearly 12,000 cases of syphilis in the United States in 2007, making them the primary driver of increased syphilis rates overall. Is that important to you? I think it is. Did you know that syphilis was almost eliminated as a public health threat less than 10 years ago, and it's on the rise? Did you know why? Ha! It remained a serious health threat in the United States in 2007, primarily because of increased transmission among men who have sex with men in the United States, according to the CDC. Dr. Gary Rose, president of the Texas-based Medical Institute for Sexual Health, told CNSNews.com that there are several factors behind the rise. One of the problems for men who have sex with men is that their sexual encounters are frequently anonymous, Rose said. The more partners you have, the higher the risk of transmission for any sexually transmitted infections. Let me stop right there. This is important for the young people who listen to the show to understand. You're living in a sexually degenerated America. You're living in a sexually degenerated media. You're living in a society that lies to you and makes you think that a good life requires random sex with strangers, both gay and straight. They have disgusting, sick shows like Cat House, where they show sick prostitutes cavorting as though it's a job and that they're just businesswomen. They are sick people, all of them. They're degenerates, in my opinion. Rose said the government has spent a lot of time and money promoting condoms among men who have sex with men, but here's the bad news. Condoms are only 85% effective against HIV and vaginal intercourse, but there really have been no good studies on the use in anal intercourse. Did you hear this? In other words, although the government puts out the notion that using condoms will prevent the spread of HIV, there's no evidence that proves that. Because even among heterosexuals, when condoms are used 100% of the time, the amount of risk reduction is only 50%. Now, I want you people to listen to me. Let's say you're a sexually frustrated middle-aged person, and you feel you missed the latest wave of the sexual revolution, and you wish you could be out there having random sex with strangers, and you're jealous of the sluts that Rupert Murdoch's cancer mind machine puts out on a daily basis, showing you one slut ski after another as though that's the norm and you're missing out on something. You actually are the lucky one. The fact of the matter is chlamydia is at an all-time high, increasing nearly 7% since 2006. That's a very serious disease. Rose said one thing that most people don't understand is that gonorrhea, syphilis, and chlamydia can be transmitted through oral sex. This is very important, Bill Clinton. You should have learned this when you were a mere youth. That is, of course, a problem not only for men having sex with men, but it is also an increasing problem for young people. And I hear now, I'm not editorializing, I'm quoting an expert especially among, quote, black teenagers. You see, African Americans, who make up 12% of the U.S. population, accounted for almost 50% of syphilis and chlamydia cases, and a whopping 70% of reported cases of gonorrhea in 2007, according to the CDC. Yes, there is a racial disparity. Young black women, 15 to 19 years old, had the highest rates for both chlamydia and gonorrhea. Now, the racial disparities in STD cases are among the worst health disparities in the nation for any health condition, according to Dr. John M. Douglas, Jr., director of the CDC's Division of STD Prevention. So why is this happening? Well, doctors said we must intensify efforts to reach these communities with needed screening and treatment services. Testing and the knowledge of infection is a critical first step toward reducing the continued consequences of these diseases. Well, doctor, you may be right, but perhaps a little intervention on the level of behavior, in advance of the behavior, would be important too. Now, here's another one, and I'll stop this in a moment. There are other stories, but I think this is a very important public health message. This is really important for those of you who are sexually promiscuous out there. The Dr. Rose said knowledge is especially key to fighting human papillomavirus, HPV. Why? You're not going to believe this, but the number of cases of head and neck cancer are rising significantly because HPV attacks the tissues of the head and neck in the same way it attacks the cervix. HPV is a major cause of cervical cancer among women, and a woman can unknowingly have the virus for years before tumors are triggered. So what I'm trying to tell you is that your mother was right when she said sex is dirty. The media is wrong by trying to tell you to engage in sex at all times with everyone. I'll be right back.
The film you are about to see is a simple and forward account of the effects of venereal disease, which may result from illicit sexual intercourse. If our country is to successfully defend our right to live the American way, it needs every one of you and requires you in the best possible condition. Any soldier who willfully or through neglect fails to maintain his body in this condition is a shirker who is throwing an extra burden on his comrades by requiring them to do his work as well as their own.
Now, that's a VD film that was run for men in the military when it was still a country ruled by, let us say, a sense of morality. But since they now permit Wicca in the military, I guess you could worship bird feathers and a rock alongside Christianity, which sustained the nation from the beginning. Anything goes, and all morality has gone out the window. And now, of course, the last nail in the coffin is about to be put into the coffin with do ask, do tell. Open homosexuality in the military will be an unmitigated disaster. Now, as I've said before, we all know that homosexuals have been in the military from the beginning. And, of course, that's a choice that people can make on their own. And it's a sexual choice people will make and live with. And that's the way it is, and that's the way it should be. But to turn this into a socially engineered behavior that straight people must now accept through diversity training, without talking about the negative effects of homosexuality on the military, is an absolute crime against the military, which is why I think the Obamaites want to do this to the military. We can talk about it if you want. I don't think it's a topic that's on everyone's mind, but I think it's important that we understand that there's a real problem here. There are other topics that we will talk about. I mean, I'm not going to go to the plane crash thing. I just turned the news on during the break, and there was the hopeless fool script reader, Wolf Blitzer, talking to us, a passenger who survived, saying,
well, your feet must have gotten wet by now. They were cold, right? Can give us a feel of how cold was the Hudson River at that time?
Come on! Come on, man! How much can you take of these people? Don't you know why you have the government you have? Don't you know how Bush can gotten away with this for 8 years? Don't you know why Nancy Pelosi can get away with building roads from here to Rome and back with your money? Don't you know why Hank Paulson can get away with robbing the Treasury and giving it to his friends in the banking business and not giving it to other bankers who are not his friends from New York? Don't you understand why? It's because of people in the media like these guys I am talking about on this show on a regular basis. Don't you understand this? All right, you don't want to talk about it, we'll go to the call. Chris in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please. What's your comment?
Yeah, I was just watching the news, and I see this guy, and he survives the plane crash, and he's on a dock. And these reporters are just huddling him, just, you know, what happened? You know, how do you feel? And the guy is freezing to death in a T-shirt. And it's like...
Right. None of them offered a coat or a cup of coffee, did they?
Nothing. It was amazing. I was, I jumped out of my seat, and I said,
Well, now you know why the American media is held in lower esteem than that of Congress.
I don't even think they're like...
You know, Chris, the American people are not stupid. They know what's going on. It's just that the media, which is supposed to be their representatives, have become instead the representatives of the government rather than of the people. I don't know how else to put it.
I don't know, but...
And I thank you for the call. I'm proud to say I'm different. I am. I am different. In many ways, I'm different because I'm different, but also because they want me to be in this corner, and I'm glad I am. So there are other topics I have up on the website. How about the bailout money going to the they approved today for $350 billion? You like that one? That make you feel good? Another $350 billion? They're saying birds. You want to go to the airline? Canadian geese now. You hear? Then today, now we right off the bat, within 20 minutes, the government said it was Canadian. The pilot said he hit geese, and he was going down. Okay? But now there's Bloomberg, the demagogue from New York, standing there with the street cop, whatever his name is, that they made it. And they're all standing there saying, well, we can't confirm it's birds, but we don't think it's terrorism, but we'll get back to you. We're really important men. So rely upon us to give you the truth. Oh, they're embarrassing. There is no truth to the rumor that Obama will now begin a Department of Gooseland Security, any more than there's any truth to the rumor that Al Gore will demand that all jet travel and, frankly, all commercial flying in America be banned to protect the Canadian goose. But we'll have to get back to you after we see which PETA representative becomes a director of airline security. San Diego, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
How you doing? I was in the military for about 10 years, and I just put in my resignation letter this week because of the new Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy turnover. And it's kind of sad knowing that Obama's going to try to tear this country apart and everything like that by allowing homosexuals in, knowing that in the UCMJ, sodomy is illegal and punishable by a court-martial. So I don't know what's going on over there in the Pentagon. I have no...
Wait, hold on. You said sodomy is currently... a court-martial offense, but you're saying after do ask, do tell, they'll eliminate that?
Yeah, Michael, I definitely...
Well, you know, actually, I think that through diversity training, the straights may have to engage in sodomy in order to understand it. They may have to give you some. They may have to give you some diversity training.
Savage.
So here we have Obama wants to homosexualize the military. I mean, make no mistake about it. That's what it is. What do you think it is? You want me to put a roses on this? And you want me to talk about the plane? It's not a radio story. The pilot's a hero. He should be on TV, not that doofus mayor. I don't know why the plane didn't break up when it hit the water. I mean, they usually smash up. It's like hitting concrete. This guy must have been some pilot. I guess the reason we haven't seen him is that he's... I guess he looks like Timothy McVeigh, so they won't show him. As you well know, any hero who looks like Timothy McVeigh is verboten for the media. They're forbidden. The only people who are allowed to be heroes, as you well know, cannot look like Timothy McVeigh. It's just the way the media operates. Now, if you think things are strange, they're going to get stranger. Remember Sandy Berger, the man who was caught stealing national security data, documents, stuffing them in his socks and his underwear? He was actually on More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks, MSNBC, which some call MSLGBT for obvious reasons. And it looks as though he is going to be hired again by Obama. That's right. There's no bottom to the government today. They're picking the lowest slime from the sewer. They got a tax dodger to run the Treasury Department. Now they want to bring back former National Security Advisor Sandy Berger? I don't believe what I'm listening to. He's been receiving briefings all along. Listen to clip 02.
He's been receiving briefings all along during the transition. I don't think there will be some remarkable new developments. Obviously, the most urgent and pressing issue he has to face every day is the threat of terrorism. Al-Qaeda.
No, the most urgent and pressing problem Obama has to face is you.
And each day he's going to have to deal
with... Please get this cretin off my show, please. To me, Sandy Berger, and Madoff are cut from the same bolt of cloth. There's no difference in my opinion. There's no difference in my opinion. They're all part of the same piece of cloth. Okay? That's how I see the world. And by the way, there is no truth to the rumor that if Bernie Madoff's jet is seized by the government, if he is found guilty, that it will be renamed. I don't believe that there's any truth to the rumors circulating that his plane will be renamed Crooked One if it is seized by the government. But there is truth that within an hour I'm going to have an aviation pioneer on the show. You talk about instincts and coincidence. I've been trying to get a very important aviation expert on the show for 2 days, Clay Lacy. And it just so happens we had booked him before the plane crash today to be on today in an hour. Clay Lacy runs Clay Lacy Aviation, one of the largest private aviation companies in the world, and actually the best. And he's going to be on a talk about various funding. You know, he's going to be on today. I'm going to ask him why that plane didn't go down. You know, it lands in the water, it doesn't break up. I don't understand that part of it. I mean, it's pretty miraculous that it didn't break up. Who's the pilot? Does anyone know yet? Not shown yet? And why is the Bank of America CEO not in prison? Now, the reason I ask that is that when the Bank of America said that they would bail, that they would buy Merrill Lynch without having done any due diligence, it was shock in the financial communities. Merrill Lynch is a lead weight around a very healthy Bank of America. I knew it the day it was announced because I know an awful lot about finances that I never discuss. And yet the CEO of B of A took on Merrill Lynch. So you have to look backwards, you know. We realized that it was all engineered, in my opinion, by Paulson, who probably went to B of A and said, look, you take on Merrill Lynch, which is sinking, and we'll give you part of the bailout money to later on to pay you back for it. Now, why would Paulson be so interested in saving Merrill Lynch? I think you'd have to look at the school ties, the rep ties, and I don't mean the reptile ties, the silk rep ties that all of these men wear. They all come from the same fraternity, as it were. That's called nepotism in any other government, but not in America. You know, I was reading Jeremiah this morning. I'm going to read you one passage. It has to do with nothing in particular and everything in particular. And Jeremiah writes, he's one of the biblical prophets, one of the Hebrew prophets, and he writes, but your eyes and your heart are not but for thy covetousness. Did you hear this? In other words, God didn't give you eyes to use them to lust after someone. You can use them if you want that way, but Jeremiah in the ancient days was telling the people, your eyes and your heart are not but for thy covetousness and for shedding innocent blood and for oppression and for violence to do it. You know, you understand that? Yeah. What am I going to say? Woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness and his chambers by injustice. Go tell that to Bernie Madoff. Actually, I found this today. I thought of Bernie Madoff. Without accusing him of anything, of course. He's an honorable man until proven guilty. After all, according to our system of justice, he's totally innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. We understand that. Although the FBI claims he admitted to the Ponzi scheme, there's no question his lawyer will soon say he admitted it under duress and because there was a rubber hose and a swinging lamp, and he has Alzheimer's disease. I know that's coming, and he takes it all back. But I read Jeremiah with regard to a guy like Bernie Madoff, the alleged crimes he committed, and I found this passage as a lesson for myself, primarily, and for my audience. Listen to this. Woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness and his chambers by injustice, that useth his neighbor's service without wages and giveth him not his hire, that saith, I will build me a wide house and spacious chambers, and cutteth him out windows, and it is sealed with cedar and painted with vermilion. Shalt thou reign because thou strivest to excel in cedar? Did not thy father eat and drink and do justice and righteousness? Then it was well with him. You know, and I thought about that. The father, the poor father, did not thy father eat and drink and do justice and righteousness? Then it was well with him, meaning your father. But then Jeremiah asked the kings, he said, shalt thou reign because thou strivest to excel in cedar? Meaning you're going to be a great king because your house is filled with cedar? You understand the parable, don't you? I'm sure you do. I mean, it's pretty interesting stuff when you look at it in context of current events, the Bible. Because if it's not in terms of current events, it almost has no meaning for people, you know. And this is not to be holier than thou, but, you know, I told you that I myself need the Bible to keep me on the straight and narrow. You know, sometimes I go off the beam. There are days I drift off. Last night, I must tell you, it was a rough day for me with the dream story. And then some cretin calling me and accusing me of profiting from slavery, which I thought was probably one of the most outrageous calls I ever had in my life. And I thought I had to think about that in great detail. First of all, the man identified himself as a Serbian. No doubt he himself is guilty of crimes that he or his family committed in the old country. He's trying to inflict them upon me. Let me be very clear. I am an immigrant son. I have never taken a nickel from a slave. My family has never profited from slavery. Blacks did not build anything that my family profited from, ever. Now, there are some rich white families who have profited from slavery, and if people have grievances, that's who they should go to. There are corporations who may have initially profited from slavery. That's who they should go to. The King of Spain profited greatly from slavery. The Arabian kings profited greatly from slavery. But I, as an American and an immigrant son, never kept a slave, never benefited from slavery. It's one of the biggest lies ever promulgated by the black revisionist historians. It's an absolute lie to say that black slavery built America. Well, that's like saying that Chinese who were conscripted to build a railroad built California. Well, they didn't build California. They built the railroad tracks. And moreover, you never hear Chinese screaming for reparations. When have you last heard Chinese screaming that someone owes them something? If it is true that their antecedents were virtual slaves building the railroads in California, how is it that the Chinese have done so well in America two generations later? You don't hear them screaming anybody owes them anything. Why is that? Now, if you want to really get into this, I would say that I am owed reparations for what I've paid. I am so sick and tired of this discussion that I'm going to fight back. I've had jobs stolen from me as a result of affirmative action. I have paid criminal levels of taxation to support people on the bottom who don't work, and to support police and jails and God knows what for people who don't work. And I'm sick of it. And I'm sure I'm not the only person sick of it. So I'm going to tell you right now, since the left is going to make race very important, I'm ready for that fight, and I'm not going to sit here and roll over and be afraid of you calling me names, because I can give it back as good as I can get. And let me tell you something. The balance sheet is not complete. You owe me money. I don't owe you anything. I've had my birthright stolen because of people who are far less qualified than me. I've had my pockets lifted to support people who are not as productive as I am, and I'm sick of it. So there, you want to have the discussion? You want to have it for the next 4 years? You can start it today. Or I really don't need to do it, frankly. We can just talk about geese migration. No doubt that we're going to hear the global warming caused the geese to fly into the plane. They were confused because of global warming. Of course, it's freezing, but that doesn't explain anything to a guy like Al Gore who disappears, as I said to you, like a chipmunk every time it gets cold. Pelosi proposes $825 billion stimulus package. Ha, 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 ha. Stimulus package. Stimulus response. All roads lead to Rome. Ha. It's as far as I can go. It's not enough, huh? No Republicans left to say, oh, my God, because they just sacked the Treasury. What have they got to say? Here's Waxman promises quick action on climate. Here's a guy who looks like he hasn't been outdoors in the last 20 years. Waxman, the guy with the big nostrils who looks like his nose has been in a tailpipe for 25 years. He looks actually like a rodent in this picture. Waxman promises quick action on climate. What is this moron talking about? Anyway, frigid air, 40 below zero, 95-year records broken, and no Al Gore. No Al Gore. No Al Gore, that's all. McCain may be Obama's secret weapon. You hear this? They're going to use the stooge again. McCain is suddenly going to be his best man at the wedding. He's going to forge a common ground with Obama on granting amnesty to illegal aliens. This is unreal. When does the country break? Comcast to broadcast all Obama channel. Wow. Obama, another adult called MSNBC. That's the Obama channel. And they're going to do it on Comcast. How come Comcast doesn't have a local conservative outlet And like in my community, there's some liberal on every. I don't know where he gets these do-gooders. There's unlimited numbers of do-gooders. They have all these funds and committees, and I never saw anything. Where do they come from? And he's always interviewing them. He did. Oh, that's very good. And how can we help you? Does Comcast have to? If I went to Comcast and said I want to be on Comcast to give a conservative viewpoint, would they have to give me equal access to these left wingers? 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Let me go to my website before we go to the break. I want to see something. Just bear with me here. Do Ask, Do Tell, homosexuals account for 65% of syphilis cases. Frighten Bernie, now bulletproof. And there's a guy standing underneath his balcony saying with a big sign, Bernie, it's not too late to do the right thing, jump. Linked from the New York Post. Terrific newspapers. Obama's inauguration, the most expensive in history. $150 million will dwarf the $42 million spent on Bush's inauguration in 05 and the $33 million spent on Clinton in 93. Isn't communism great? Isn't it great how absolute Marxism gets away with virtual total control of the press? $150 million for a coronation? This is beyond comprehension. How come that money could not be? You don't think that money could better be spent helping the poor, downtrodden folks in America? Particularly those screaming that whites owe them something. You want to get down and dirty on this? Why is Obama blowing $150 million on an inauguration instead of spreading it out amongst the poor? Think about it and get back to me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Everyone's talking about the plane. It's a big deal. I mean, the pilot's the hero. But, of course, Mayor Bloomberg has to jump out in front of the camera and make it look like he has something to do with it. I'll take all your questions until midnight tonight. I still don't know. The plane didn't sink. Usually they sink. I once asked the pilot. I was in a private jet. I said, well, they break up, you know. I learned. What do they give you the raft story? Well, here's an example. The passengers were saved with the raft, shooting down the raft. Lance, San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, you've asked why the plane didn't break up. I'm sure that the first and most important reason is the excellence of the flight crew. The second is a guess. This plane was an A320. It's made in Europe. I know that certain parts of it are made of composite. Maybe we can get a dialogue started here with people who really know the truth of how it's built. I think it's built like a boat in terms of fibers and miracle plastics, which would give it a certain resilience. And, of course, aerodynamics translates to hydrodynamics, so obviously the pilot did an excellent job.
Yeah. The main thing is it didn't break up on hitting the water, so he knew what he was doing in the way he touched down on the water, because one wrong move and the plane would have broken in half. That would have been the end of the road. So he obviously skimmed the water, which I think is a miraculous piece of piloting. I wonder if he has any military training. You know, that's an interesting question, because today you would expect there could be a whole slew of pilots with prior military training, and that we have had an ongoing war for so many years. You know, for a long while, there weren't too many pilots left who had military training. There were, you know, after the Vietnam War, obviously, there were many pilots who had Vietnam, you know, experienced pilot. And then it died out for a while, but I would think today there'd be many pilots with military experience, which I think makes a difference. I would think.
Well, they go through all this simulator training. I think that there's a certain survival skill associated with the military training, of course, but I'm giving some credit to the plastic construction, if in fact that's true. Maybe someone out there knows exactly how the fuselage of the A320 is built, and they can call in and shed some light on it.
Okay, that's a great starter, and if anyone knows why the plane or how the plane is made, that's a great call if you want to get into that. So 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What else do we have? Bonnie Frank. Oh, God, what's the point of mocking him? He mocks himself every time he talks. There's nothing out there. There is, there isn't, you know. I gave you Do Ask, Do Tell. You think it's going to go anywhere? You think that you're going to see a national dialogue on whether or not it's a benefit to the military to have open homosexuality? Do you ever think that anybody in Congress, these cowards, are ever going to talk about the possible negative ramifications? Never. Never. So I raised the issue. Syphilis, let's start with the disease rates amongst gays, if you want to call them gays. I don't know why gay, since we hear there's so much unhappiness in the gay community. Why call them gay? You know, that's, you want to talk, let's talk about it. Or the same article about STDs went into the heterosexual community, and we talked about chlamydia, all-time high, gonorrhea, all-time high. We talked about the dangers of oral sex being a transmission for gonorrhea, syphilis, and chlamydia through oral sex. You wouldn't know that if you don't understand medicine or science. But this is a problem that's increasing for young people, especially black teens, according to the CDC. Now, that's something that you have to talk about. Why? Because African Americans, who make up 12% of the U.S. population, unfortunately accounted for almost 50% of syphilis and chlamydia cases. And they accounted for a whopping 70% of reported cases of gonorrhea in 2007, African Americans. Do you want to talk about that? It's a very uncomfortable statistic, and it requires very adult discussion, which you're not going to get from politicians or from medical professionals, because they're afraid of being called racist by the race baiters amongst you. But if you want to reduce these rates of STDs, then talk about them. And if you want to talk about human HPV and the number of cases of head and neck cancer rising significantly because of HPV, which is related to these diseases, let's do it. I don't think I'm going to do it. It's a horrible topic. Nobody wants to know about it. All they want to think is that if you watch Cat House on HBO, you're missing something. You know, one dirty skank after another getting $1,000 an hour to have sex with mentally deranged people, with that fat pig who runs it, sitting there like a king, like he's some role model. Why? Again, the vermin in the media. I mean, you don't have to look any further than the vermin in the media. They are the kings of our time. The vermin who run the broadband, the vermin who run the media outlets, they are the kings of our time, almost more so than the politicians. And they are defiling their houses, as I told you, Jeremiah said the ancient kings did, where he said, so you've glorified your house with cedar. And he says, okay. But later on in Jeremiah, it's interesting. You know, we were talking last week about absinthe and wormwood. Behold, I will feed them wormwood and make them drink the water of gall. Wow.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Back to The Savage Nation. I want to move on. I've been talking about success being punished in America. I've been talking about a whole psychology to punish people of quality, and to, of course, punish people who are successful, and to advance affirmative action where the less qualified are pushed ahead of the most qualified. And I'm warning you that just as academia has melted down as a result of this, your life itself is going to be in danger. Now, let me give you an example. Today, there was a miracle in the Hudson River. A commercial flight ran into a flock of geese. The engines failed. The pilot had to go down. He brought it down into the Hudson River. I speculated in the last hour, thinking he must have had military training, because an ordinary pilot probably would have hit the water at the wrong angle, and the plane would have broken up. The people would have died. We just got the resume of the pilot, U.S. Air Force F-4 pilot from 1973 to 1980. Now, I want to repeat that. Air Force pilot, 1973 to 1980. Flight leader and training officer with experience in Europe, Pacific, and at Nellis Air Force Base, serving as Blue Force mission commander in red flag exercises. I don't know if you understand what this means. This guy was probably one of the finest pilots in the world working for U.S. Airways. Flight leader in the military, 1973 to 1980. The guy is a man with two master's degrees. The man has his own business. The man is a true hero. But let's not lose the big picture. Yes, he was the captain of this Airbus that went down. And he's been a captain of an Airbus from 1980 to the present. So the man knows the plane as well as you may know your car. But don't discount the Air Force experience. His name is Chesley B. Sully Sullenberger III. That's correct. A real American name, Chesley B. Sully Sullenberger III. Now, I don't know about you, but for years when I've gone into an airplane, I always used to, when I was able to look into the pilot's compartment, I always looked for a gray-haired male. And I used to joke when I used to be able to joke, saying, I'm glad to see you're in there, Captain. And, you know, I used to say, thank God it's not someone put in there because of their gender or their, ethnicity. Sorry, I'm laying it on the line. I'm going to give it to you the way I see it. You don't like it? Turn the show off. Go listen to some propaganda that'll put rubbish in your ears. I don't care what you listen to. But if you're listening to me, you're going to hear my opinion. You want to destroy America? Then keep pushing unqualified people into every aspect of American society. Right now, the government is broken. Take a look at middle management of the U.S. government. You'll know what I'm talking about. Take a look at the deadbeats in there pushing papers around. So here you have a pilot that saves the lives because the man had the best experience in the world. Totally the best pilot you could ever get. 19,000 hours, rated airline transport pilot, airplane single and multi-engine land, commercial privileges, glider, A320, B737, DC-9, MD-80, Learjet, 19,000 hours. Hello. Certified flight instructor, ground instructor. Okay. That's what we're talking about. Would you rather have him as a pilot or a transsexual who was put in there because of affirmative action in order to make the airlines look more like America, or shall I say more like Gavin Newsom's office? I mean, what would you rather have as a pilot, him or a transsexual with a half a beard? You get the picture, don't you? I hope you do. U.S. Airways pilot. This guy's a hero. I mean, you can't take it away from him. You can go to my website now. We have his picture up. It's on michaelsavage.com. It looks like Marlon Perkins of Zoo Parade. Remember Marlon Perkins of Zoo Parade years ago? That's so long ago, probably not. But I used to like Marlon Perkins. In other words, he looks like a typical thin, older white guy, like a grandfather guy you'd see in a mall. Who would have thunk, as they say? The pilot saved the lives today. Now, will he get the credit for it? No, the mayor of New York will take the credit because he has a nice suit and tie. He saved the people. The hero, Sullenberger, 57 years old, worked for U.S. Airways since 1980, flying Airbuses, spent 6 years as a U.S. Air Force F-4 fighter pilot. Bingo, end of story. He should be president of the United States. They ought to run him as a Republican. Maybe the party can be saved again. Now that we see there's a real hero and quality really counts, you know? Quality and experience really count in certain areas. You understand or not? I do. So that's it. The pilot saved the plane. Don't give me about composites and balsa wood. I'm sure that had something to do with it floating. But I want to go back. If this man did not understand every aspect of that plane's aerodynamics and every aspect of the glide path and every aspect of impact of an Airbus on water, which he must have gone through 1,000 times in a flight simulator and in his own mind, he must have prepared for this in his entire life. What would happen if my engines failed over water? How would I glide this plane over water? He had to have done this in his head 1,000 times. He had to. He had to. This didn't happen by chance. Planes break up when they hit water. And they have to come in on exactly the right glide path to not break up when they come in on water. So there it is. It's the pilot. Normally pilots get blamed after a crash, by the way. That's what the NTSB specializes in. You know, if there's a plane's defect, they always blame the pilot who's dead. But in this case, the pilot saved the day, and he's the hero, and he's not been seen yet. But you heard about him first in radio on michaelsavage.com. The hero of Flight 1549 is Chesley B. Sully Sullenberger III. He crash-landed the U.S. Airways A320 Airbus in the Hudson River without any fatalities that we know of. Most important thing is that he's a flight instructor, 6 years in the U.S. Air Force as an F-4 fighter pilot. You get it? Well, that's it. That's the whole story. There's nothing more to say. It'll be up on michaelsavage.com. Put his picture on the wall for your child. Put the picture of the pilot up on the wall for your child and tell him what a hero is. a real hero. Don't you love CNN? CNN's heroes. A half a hero now. Everyone's a hero, but it's version of the world from the media. That's a hero, what you have today. Hero pilot at military background. Plain and simple, that's my headline. Meet Chesley B. Sully Sullenberger III, who did it. That's the story. They're calling it the miracle on the Hudson, which it is. The pilot's the hero. He's the miracle. Now, that's what I want to see in the military. More men like him. Not put in there because they're gay. I mean, you know, I'll go make him a general so he looks more like the Castro district and everyone feels better. That's what they're going to do. You wait and see. Wait until you see. The whole thing's upside down. Just everything's upside down. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The hero pilot, it turns out, had 6 years experience flying F-4 Phantom jets. He's a flight instructor. This is the hero. Chesley B. Sully Sullenberger III. Experience matters. To me, it's always been quality. In order for there to be equality in America, I've always said there has to be quality. You cannot start appointing people based upon race or gender or sex or whatever, race or sex or ethnicity, without a disaster occurring, which is why America's melting down on so many levels. Now, this is not to say that it's not all white males who are destroying the economy. It is. Now, let me be very, very clear about it. The thieves at the top happen to all be white males. I mean, I'll be very honest with you. Maybe there's one exception. So, I mean, I'm pretty clear on what's going on where. But I'm talking on the day-to-day level, the elbow-thrashing level of reality, as a Buddhist once told me, is how he describes you and me and the world we live in. The elbow-thrashing level of reality. Forget about sitting in the lotus position in Marin County on a hillside going om. You know, anybody can pretend that they're elevated sitting there, but when it comes down to flying in a jet, you'd rather have somebody who's qualified, not someone who's put in there because he looks good in the cabin. This guy's a hero. And you want to hear intuition and chance and luck in radio? I've been trying to book Clay Lacy on this show for about a week now, and his schedule didn't work, and I figured he wasn't interested. He's going to be on in about 10 minutes. Clay Lacy owns Clay Lacy Aviation. He's a man who owns the biggest jet charter service in America, and it's actually the best. But he's been a showbiz glamour pilot, a military jock, an experimental test pilot, an unlimited air race champion, an aviation record setter, a United Airlines number one pilot, a teacher, I mean, an entrepreneur. So just today, he agreed to come on the show. And he is the most respected jet charter company operator in the country. His credits include films such as Top Gun, Flight of the Intruder, The Client, Firefox, and many of his jets are owned by the Hollywood famous, and they put him in charter through his service. So he's going to be with us. What's interesting to me is that this happened on his very same day as the hero pilot had military background here in New York. I can't believe the confluence of events, how it's going to. He's going to answer some questions for us about experience, about what the plane's construction is. And, of course, interesting things about how the economy has affected the private jet industry and that nature of the business. That's the main reason I had wanted him on, is the business changing. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to WOR in New York. David, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Many of your listeners may not be aware I'm in the New York area at Bloomberg's press conference this evening. He mentioned that this pilot is not only a hero, he walked through the plane twice before he actually got off to make sure there was no one on the plane.
That's a true captain. In other words, if this man had gotten off the plane and one passenger, God forbid, had left on and he found it afterwards, they died, he probably wouldn't have been able to live with himself.
Yeah, he's a true American hero. You know, you've been talking about it for years, about how when you fly, you want to fly with ex-fighter pilots. And it bore truth today.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly, you heard me for years. I used to joke. I'd peek in and I hope the guy was an old white guy with blue eyes. You know what I mean? That's what I always hope for. I mean, to be honest with you, I know women can fly, but I'd rather they be an old white guy with military experience.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're always
just
right.
Just my own little bias, you know. I have a little biases towards survival. That's all. Thanks for the call. 1-800-4. You might have said it for years. So now what? Now I have to give them all a quiz before I get on a plane? Do you or don't you have military experience? You can't even get, well, you can't look in the pilot's cabin anymore. That's good because of the wonderful, wonderful immigration policies. And living all in a locked camp now. The pilot can't come out to go to the bathroom. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. New York City, again, WOR, Wayne, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Always a privilege to speak to you, Dr. Savage. You know, I had the privilege of flying over all over the world with Pan Am for about 10 years until some creeps decided to ruin that airline. Bunch of greedy guys. But forget, that's another story. But I want to tell you about the fuselage. We were trained every single year twice on all the airplanes, and we had to simulate these kinds of events. It's called a ditching. It's actually a normal, a quote-unquote normal procedure. I mean, it doesn't mean it's always going to come off, but there's no question the pilots know exactly what to do. You're absolutely right. And as far as
were you a pilot or a crew member?
I was the top. In other words, I was in charge of the flight attendants. They called it a purser back then. Today, I don't know what they call it. But what
so you were the guy I got the drinks from.
You got the drinks, but
I'm joking. Come on, I had many a good drinks on Pan Am with many a purser. In those days, you used to be able to drink with the passengers.
Forest Hills with my dad. We watched every plane come over into LaGuardia, and that's where I got my dream to go and do that. Now I'm a teacher. I'm taking this right into the class.
Oh, Wayne, let's go back to the plane. This pilot was not an ordinary pilot because this is not an easy maneuver to ditch in a river and not break the plane up. Why do you suppose the plane didn't break up?
Dr. Savage, they're all Top Gun flyers, just like you said. They have, every one of them, I sat with guys all over the world. We used to go to...
Well, what do you mean they're all? Who, where? U.S. Airways?
No, I'm talking about every one of these pilots. That's where they get them. They get them from the military. These are the best guys on Earth. They all know what they're
doing. Wait a minute. Not every pilot has an Air Force or military background.
Not every one of them. I'm telling you. I sat with them in Cairo. I sat with them in India.
Well, now, wait. You're talking about years ago. Wayne, not today. Today, and that doesn't mean that pilots are incompetent if they didn't have military training. I'm just saying that's the extra rung. I mean, I've flown in private jets where the young guys who have no military background.
I would be, maybe that's true, but I'd be surprised because most, you can't even get in if you don't have the super experience. They're not looking for, you know, Joe Schmo that has a license to fly. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'll tell you, this guy's going to be a very sought-after private jet pilot after this with 19,000 hours. You know, with all his experience in Gulfstream. I mean, if you owned the Gulfstream G50, 550, you'd want him to work for you, wouldn't you?
You would. These guys love, they eat, sleep. He would never go for a private pilot situation because they eat, sleep, and love this thing. It's like, it's in your blood. They just...
Well, they love the passengers. They love taking care of the passengers. They love being responsible for them. They're true old world captains in that respect.
Right. But as far as that ditching, all the fuselages are designed for that. We learned about every single plane. They're all, every single last one of them can be done with what he did with that plane today. And in fact,
he had to skim the water.
My dad had a ditch in the Pacific.
Well, Wayne, if you skim the water, as I understand it from pilots, and I'm not a pilot, if you hit any kind of wave, it's like hitting a brick wall.
But that's out in the middle of the ocean. You're talking about the Hudson River. It's basically nothing. You know, it's a rippling pond. The Hudson River is not a big deal.
All right. So that had a lot to do with why the plane was able to, in essence, skim the water like a stone thrown across a pond.
And by the way, what you probably also don't know because the local, the water, a private water company, the owner saw that the guy was landing on the water. He came out with his ferries, a private ferry that goes from New Jersey to Manhattan daily with the commuters. He went out there with three or four of his boats, and they unloaded all the passengers onto those things and got them over to New York City
I saw that on TV. They just volunteered, in other words. They didn't wait for a government contract.
New York City.
In other words, they didn't call Obama to see if they can get a little grift to send out the ferries. They just did it to save the passengers. I was very amazed by that they didn't need Mayor Bloomberg to write a certain script to reimburse them.
No, shit.
Thanks for the call. I'm itching already for the comment. It could be the niacin. I don't know, but I got an itch from that conversation. Well, here we are. Don't ask, don't tell. Do ask, do tell. It does matter. You know, they say experience matters. It certainly did in this case today. And now we're talking in a few minutes, the minute I come back, in less than a few minutes, with Clay Lacy. And you're going to say, well, that's an amazing story. He runs the nation's most respected jet charter company out of Los Angeles. And the reason I have him on is because I wanted to talk about how has the economy affected the private jet charter industry. And I wanted to have you, the listener, ask questions about private jets. Some of you will fly in them from time to time, but most of you dream of flying in a private jet. And I thought having the number one person in the country with the biggest company, the best company, the safest company on the show would be interesting. And I wanted to ask him some questions, so he'll be with us right here on the Savage Nation. I think you'll be very, very pleased.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Hero pilot had military background. This is an astonishing story coming out of New York today. As I suspected, the U.S. Airways pilot who saved the lives of those passengers today, in fact, had 6 years' experience as an F-4 Phantom pilot. And just today, before this happened, we were very fortunate to have booked Clay Lacy for this show, and I've been on some of Clay Lacy's planes. He is the owner and president of the nation's most respected jet charter company. He has many credits, great background, and we're going to have Clay Lacy on right now on the Savage Nation. Mr. Lacy, it's an honor to have you on the Savage Nation.
Glad to be here.
Isn't that an amazing story today of Chesley B. Sully Sullenberger, the U.S. Airways pilot, who saved the day today in New York? Isn't that an amazing story?
It's amazing. He must have done a great job. He must have put the plane in level, and the fact that the airplane all stayed intact in one piece and didn't sink right away, why? With the weather they had back there, the cold weather, it's just amazing.
Mr. Lacy, why do you suppose the plane, aside from the fact that he did, you know, he landed it exactly in the right way, he skimmed the water in essence, and it didn't break up, why did that plane float for so long?
Well, I'm not sure what the how far they were going. I don't know what town they were going to, but I'm sure they had a partial fuel load, which means they had a lot of air in the wings from the tanks that were not full. That helped. And if there were
okay.
No big holes in the fuselage, it just takes a while for it to start sinking.
Well, let's get back to why I asked you to come on the Savage Nation. You know, the private jet industry is your bailiwick. And with the economy being the way it is, I was curious, has the economy affected the private charter jet industry directly yet?
Yes, it has. I would say we're off maybe 15% the last few months, but it's not catastrophic. And, you know, most of our flying is for business purposes. And if business is going to, if people are going to be competitive and continue to do business, they have to travel.
Now, have falling gas, you know, aviation fuel prices balanced out falling business in any regard? When I flew with one of your planes last spring, there was a fuel surcharge because gasoline was through the roof at that time. I guess those surcharges are gone, but is there a compensation in some way with lower fuel prices?
Well, not really, because we passed the surcharge on at cost, not making any money on it, and as the fuel has gone down and we've taken a surcharge off, why, you know, it's the profit's the same to us, but it's certainly a good thing. I'm glad to see fuel prices down, because it was getting the added surcharge, I'm sure, had some effect on our business prior to the to the recession that we're in now.
Well, you're in the Hollywood area, and I, you know, your planes are there, and I've seen some of your incredible military aircraft. In fact, you have some great World War II planes there. I have a picture on my website, michaelsavage.com, that's going up today of one of your planes and one of your there it is. Michael Savage visits Clay Lacy Aviation Museum, Van Nuys. Beautiful World War II Mustang, I believe. This was a purplish one that you have? Do you collect and restore these planes? Is that part of your interest area?
Well, I've always been interested in those planes, and that purple P-51, I bought it in 1964 to fly in the air races at Reno, and I won the races in 1970, and I've never sold it. I've kept it. And I've got about six airplanes that are, let's say, historic airplanes, which I enjoy having.
Hollywood is in your backyard, and many of Hollywood's most famous, we're not going to mention names, own private jets. From a tax point of view, is it so that in order to gain turn this into the planes into a business and get a tax write-off, the plane has to be put into a charter business, as it were, and be in charter 51% of the time it's flown? Is that how it works?
Yes, that's it, basically.
Okay, and I know this is a touchy question. I don't know if there's an answer to it yet. Obama, the Obama administration, are they going to change any rules with regard to private jet ownership, tax-wise?
I have not heard of anything yet. I mean, there's some rumors, but I have not really heard of any hard proposal.
Okay. Now, you have some new Gulfstream 550s in your fleet. Can you tell us about them? What's the range of these planes?
Well, we have two brand-new 450s, and they have a range of about 5,000 miles, a little bit over 5,000. They can go worldwide. In fact, both of our newest 450s are on trips now on the other side of the world, down in Australia, and one's on a round-the-world trip. And a 550, we have one of those. It'll go over 7,000 miles. And
well, you're saying 7,000 miles without refueling, Gulfstream 550. So that means Los Angeles to Moscow nonstop?
Oh, easy, yeah.
Wow. Easy. How many hours flying is that?
Well, Moscow is probably only about 12 hours, but they will fly now. Some of these airplanes will. The 550 will fly over 15 hours.
That is a very long period of time. But, of course, the beauty of a private jet is that a plane of that size has a sleeping compartment, no doubt.
They all have sleeping accommodations. They have a sleeping area where crew members can sleep. Because on a trip that long, when you're going more than 12 hours, you have to take an extra pilot. So you have to have an area for the crew to sleep. But the passengers,
I'm looking at the pilot, Mr. Lacey, today, who saved the day in New York on the U.S. Airways flight, and he has 6 years as a fighter pilot. Do you have former fighter pilots as some of your pilots in these airplanes?
Yeah, we have several pilots that are ex-Air Force type pilots, as I am and myself. And that guy did a great job, and I'm sure that some of his military experience all of a sudden came into his head, and he did a wonderful job.
Well, let's go to the private jet situation. This is an Airbus, and the man brings it down on the water. It doesn't break up. Could a, God forbid, a Gulfstream, if it was forced down, the geese thing, could a pilot skim the water in the same manner and successfully see the plane not break up, meaning a non-commercial jet? Are they built the same way?
They're built the same way. As a matter of fact, the smaller corporate executive jets are probably stronger than an airliner.
Really? Amazing. Well, that's that's pretty good to know. So I'm looking at your background. I've known that you have been a military pilot, but you've also been characterized as a show business glamour pilot. What's that all about?
Well, I've done a lot of work for Hollywood, film work. I've done all the aerial photography for movies like Top Gun, Flight of the Intruder, The Great Santini, over 100 movies I've done work in. Of course, Top Gun was probably the biggest.
When you say, you mean you flew the plane while they were shooting the film? Is that it?
Yes. I have an airplane that's specially equipped with two periscopes, one out the top and one out the bottom, that we can fly alongside of a fighter jet or an airliner. Oh, we do almost every airline commercial you see on TV in the world. And we fly along and shoot film, either film or video. I was doing a job day before yesterday on a new Boeing airplane doing in-flight refueling up here at Edwards Air Force Base. We did that on high-definition video.
Isn't that amazing? Let me ask you the last question, safety. Of all the private jets, I mean, there are various safety records. I know Gulfstream is one of the highest, if not the highest. Is that still true? At least it was true up until a year or so ago. Does Gulfstream still enjoy that quality safety, that safety record? King?
Yes, it does. Yeah, the Gulfstream been in just a marvelous airplane, very safe airplane. And part of the reason for that, too, is that the Gulfstream company and the people that operate them have always had the training mentality, the safety and extra training mentality that helps make them safe.
How much does a Gulfstream 450 cost, a new one?
A brand new one today, probably about $37 million.
Is that before the interior or including the interior?
Including the interior.
No, I'm not joking because I've looked on the internet. There are companies that you could spend, if you buy a Boeing a 737 for private use, I guess people spend $50 million furnishing them, don't they?
Yeah, I would say the average BBJ probably costs around $15 to $20 million, the interior, you know.
You're here just for the interior. All right. Well, Clay Lacy, I want to thank you for being on the Savage Nation. It's been a real thrill for me, and it's quite a day for anyone in the aviation business when you consider the miracle on the Hudson.
Well, thank you. And the next time you're in Van Nuys, I'd like to personally give you a tour of World War II airplanes and modern jets.
Oh, I'd love to see the World War II planes. I was a kid who built the model, so... when I saw that Mustang, I had to put it up on my website. Thanks very much, Mr. Lacy. A real pleasure.
Yeah.
Bye now. Well, quite a coincidence. Very interesting. This is the Savage Nation. We're talking about the jet crash called the Miracle on the Hudson, which you've all heard about. But you probably or may not yet have heard that the pilot himself is the reason for the miracle. It didn't happen by accident. Here is a man with immense experience, including 6 years in an F-4 Phantom. I'll be right back. Savage. U.S. Air Force today, as we do kind of on a regular basis here, all military, all branches of the military, because the hero pilot had 6 years in the military in the U.S. Air Force flying F-4 Phantoms. He wasn't a desk jockey. Play it aloud. Come on. You want to talk about bad luck and bad timing? George Bush, tonight in about 10 minutes, he's going to give a farewell address. You hear? A night that every channel in the world is breaking to the Hudson River with the jets, with the passengers, with the pants, with the cold, with the coffee, with the cups, with the blankets. Chaim Bush is going to give a speech defending himself. No one's going to listen. As it is, it was going to be poorly attended. It's unbelievable bad timing, but if you want to talk about symbolism, whereas the pilot of the U.S. Airways 1549 checked twice before he got off the sinking plane, Bush seems to be getting off the sinking ship of state while the rest of us are stuck on it with the doors locked. How do you like that, banana? I know, on his Bush bashing, you don't like it. He was a great president, a good Christian man. He did the best he could. He meant well. He was a true conservative. But he's blocked by them liberals in the newspapers. Yeah, I know. Yeah, he did a great job. I'm sure the globalists who put him in power are thrilled with his performance. Let's see, the dollar's worth about 40% of what it was worth when he took office. The military's expended itself down to the last man. It's extended all over the world. Let us see. What else did Bush achieve for the globalists? Oh, yes, the borders are more broken than they've ever been. They can almost never be repaired. Hero Border Patrol agents are left locked up in prison while scandalous drug dealers have been released. Let's see, what else has he done for the globalist agenda? You know, when this started years ago, you think that the right-wingers were crazy when they were talking about, you know, one-world government, globalism. You thought they were nuts? Oh, really? Take a look at what Hank Paulson at the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Reserve, have done to this country. And if you can still say with a straight face and a straight mind that they believe in the sovereignty of a nation, then you're insane. They don't want nationhood. They want nothing to do with a nation. They see themselves as the mercantile princes of yesteryear, and they do not have any respect for a nation. You see, the people still do. And it's not only in this country where the people still crave identity with a nation. You go to Europe where they try to roll them into the European Union. Every time there was a popular vote, the people themselves said, no, we love being Irish or Czech or German. We love our borders, our language, our culture, our traditions. But the globalists said, you can drop dead because we're going to put you into a new world order, and we're going to rule you from afar, and you're going to have almost no human rights. And that's exactly what's going on right now. If you look, I'm going to give you a little example of this on another level. You look at northern Italy. There's a small region of northern Italy that is very close to Austria. I forget the exact name of the region. But the most northern part of this district or region of Italy is more Austrian than it is Italian, while the southern region of it is certainly more Italian than it is Austrian. And that has to do with conquest and invasion and things of that nature, going back to the Napoleonic times. But there are mountain valleys between these two areas where people speak a language called Ladino, L-A-D-I-N-O, which is a mixture, an almost incomprehensible language to most people. It is a combination, as it were, of ancient Celtic and Latin. It's called Ladino. 80,000 people adhere to Ladino, which is a language spoken since the year 1 AD, when the Romans first were conquered by the Celts, and when the Romans went as far north as Britain, where Britain is today. So I'm talking about something very important to those of you who love this country. You're not alone. You're not alone at all. It's the slime mold that has ascended to the top of the political sphere that does not believe in the manifest destiny of our nation. In fact, they have nothing but contempt for those of you who love the soil of this nation. I'm still a Boy Scout. I still believe in the soil. I believe in the land. I believe in the traditions, and I love the country. They don't, because never did they mention the country. Never did they mention our borders, our language, our culture. Never. But as I said to you, there's a region of northern Italy near Austria where about 80,000 people stick to a language that is called Ladino, that goes back to the first century AD. Now, why do they stick to the language of their ancestors? Because they love their tradition. They love their language. They love the history of their own people, just as you love America. And just as you love the traditions of America, and just as you love what America stands for, don't be disheartened by these left-wingers and these others who don't even have the honor to call themselves what they are. They're all men without a country, these money men. These money men are men without a country. There has been this evil from the beginning of recorded history, and there will be this evil class until the end of recorded history. The only challenge we face is how to survive in spite of them and with them, because they're not going away. If you think that Obama is not using the same class, you're mistaken. He was put in power by the very same class. The very same class of money changers put Obama in office in order to continue to get away with what they've been doing under Bush and under Clinton, and possibly going back even further on the level that they've been getting away with it. That was another story. The level that they're getting away, what they're getting away with today, has never before been seen in the history of the world. You are witnessing the greatest theft in the history of the world, never mind the United States of America. And if you think Bernie Madoff and his buddies are alone, you're mistaken. All you got to do is look at Treasury Secretary Paulson, the federal chairman, and others. They're Bernie Madoff on steroids, in my opinion. In the next hour, we'll talk more about the last day of the madness of King George Bush and his buddies, and some of Obama's buddies who are trying to achieve cabinet status, including Sandy Berger. Can you believe they're trying to bring back Sandy Berger, Sox Berger, a man who got caught stealing secret documents out of the National Library, the archives, rather? Can you believe they have the audacity to do this? Yes. Why? Because Obama's not running America. It is not Obama. Clinton won the election. You don't know this. You don't understand this, but they're playing feint of hand with you. They've appeased the minorities by putting Obama in because Hillary couldn't win. But make no mistake about it, it's the Hillary faction of the Democrat Party that is still running this country. And you'll see that more apparently in the months and years to come. There's no question in my mind it's going to become more apparent as time goes on. And if you love the Clinton years, if you love them, well, get ready. You're going to have them again, only they're not going to be as fun this time because they're more desperate and they're older. In any case, God bless America. God bless the United States military, today especially the United States Air Force, for Well, just for giving us the best darn pilots in the world.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what we've been discussing in the Savage Nation. The plane crash in New York City. Bank of America to get millions more. Bush's farewell. Let's take Bush's farewell. Do you care about Bush's farewell speech? Or should it be from San Quentin? Should he apologize to American conservatives? Will he be honored by liberal historians? The plane crash in New York City. Were you astounded by the way the media was reacting to the plane that crashed in the Hudson River, the hysteria? Which TV personality was the most hysterical and foolish? Will PETA sue the airlines for killing the geese? Will Al Gore demand that all commercial airline flights be banned to protect the migratory routes of geese? Will Obama begin a Department of Gooseland Security? We've talked about how Obama has been put on a pedestal so high that even liberals are starting to second-guess they're appointing him the chosen one. Joining us today is the money and politics columnist for U.S. News and World Report, James Pethokoukas, to talk about his article, Why Obama is Causing a Liberal Freakout. James Pethokoukas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Give us the background on your article.
Well, listen, for liberals, this is the golden moment. This is when all their dreams are going to come true. White House Chief of Staff, or future White House Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel, said that when you have a crisis, you have to take advantage of it. It's a golden opportunity. And for liberals, they think this is the opportunity to push through every program, no matter what the cost they ever dreamed about, from spending on green investments to infrastructure to health care. And they're worried now that Obama, even though he's proposing to spend $800 billion on this stimulus package, that it's not enough, that he needs to spend $1 trillion, $1.5 trillion, maybe $2 trillion in order to push through all their dream wish list of everything they want. And they think he's playing it on the cheap, and that he is wasting this time of crisis that they want him to maximize on to push through like the liberal agenda of the past 10 years that they never got to get through because either Clinton didn't want to spend money on it, and of course Bush was going to veto it. So this is their moment. They're worried that Obama's blowing it.
What about this talk from some on the left that Obama is more conservative than they thought?
It's amazing because even the whiff of tax cuts just drives liberals crazy. And the fact that in this package that maybe Obama is going to propose $300 billion worth of tax cuts, which aren't really tax cuts as most people probably think of them. In a way, it's just it's more government spending, but they're tax cut-like. That's enough to drive Democrats crazy because what they want him to do is not spend any money on tax cuts because that doesn't send money to unions. That doesn't send money to their supporters who are really into the environment. That sends money to you and me. And that's not what they're about. They're about sort of command and control. We say where the money goes. We say who spends it. And for Obama to spend $300 billion on something they don't want, again, it's driving them crazy. They want – ideally, they would want no tax cuts, spend more of that money on – whether it's in these green investments or it's sending money to state and local governments so they don't have to make any hard choices like making their state and local governments more efficient. They won't have to fire anybody. They won't have to fire any of those fine government employees, government union employees. They don't want them to make those kinds of hard choices. But they may have to make those choices because Obama's not spending the money exactly the way especially the Congress and Washington, wants him to.
Some on the left are saying Obama's talk is stronger than his plans.
Well, I mean, Obama has been pretty pessimistic about the economy. When a lot of professional economists were talking about inflation going to 8%, he and his people have been talking 10%. So they have been among the most pessimistic, most bearish on the economy. So given that kind of talk, there are a lot of people, you know, liberal economists at all these think tanks in D.C., people on Capitol Hill, who are really hoping for and expecting a just monumental, forget about spending $800 billion in 2 years. They want $1 trillion in 1 year and then another $1 trillion next year. And they're expecting that kind of action, given what Obama was saying. But what they got is something what they think is really a half measure. I mean, it sounds ridiculous. I mean, $800 billion seems like a pretty full measure to spend over 2 years. But when you're looking for maybe $2 trillion, which is really almost unfathomable because you're sending the debt up to records not seen since World War II. But that's what they want him to do. They say, forget about the deficit. Forget about the fact that next year going to have at least a $2 trillion deficit. And I would take the over on that number. They say, listen, if you're going to talk about an economic apocalypse happening in this country, let's start spending money like it. And for them, that means really $1 trillion a year in new spending.
What is this Clinton derangement syndrome you talk about?
that is the fear. Now, listen, a lot of people may think Clinton was this great liberal president. Liberals have a lot of problems with him because when he was elected, he was talking about a lot of the same things Obama was talking about, spending money on infrastructure and sort of reorienting the economy. And what they got was someone who followed Alan Greenspan's idea and started focusing a lot more on cutting the budget deficit, free trade. So I call that Clinton derangement syndrome. It's the gnawing fear that this nice liberal progressive guy that you just elected will turn out to be far, far more pro-business than you could have ever possibly feared. I think there's some concern with Obama, given that he has a lot of advisors, some of whom are here in the Clinton years, that Obama is going to end up being too centrist for their liking when it comes to economic policy.
What do you think happens from here?
Well, I think his team is worried about the deficit getting out of control, so I think they don't want to start spending crazy money. $800 billion is enough, but I don't think they want to spend $1 trillion a year to deal with this downturn. I think the real question comes: what happens after the economy begins to pick up? Do they then sort of go back to more of that campaign agenda, which they were talking about? Raising taxes. Repealing some of the Bush tax cuts and raising taxes on business and wealthier Americans. Do they then begin to push hard a lot of these limits on carbon emissions, this cap and trade, super giant regulation plan? Do they then begin to push health care a lot harder? I think once we get through this period of economic weakness, I think then at that point, I think they begin to push that sort of high tax, high regulation agenda.
There have been complaints made that Obama's policies are closer to Reagan than FDR. Do you really think that's true?
That just shows you that the mere mention of tax cuts are making these people fear that they've somehow elected Ronald Reagan, which is ridiculous. I mean, Obama is a guy who believes in higher taxes. He believes in much bigger government. He believes in a lot more spending, a lot more regulation. But he's being forced by current economic situations to sort of adhere to economic reality, which is if you raise taxes during a downturn, you're going to make it even worse. So he had to hold back on that. Again, I think once we get through this recession, I think you're going to see more of the Obama that really, I think, scared people on the right that we were going to return to a high tax, high spend, high regulation economy, which the last time we had that led to just a horrific decade in the 1970s. I think we might get that. But for now, I think the economic reality is forcing them to do things like not raise taxes and put off some of the things that could really hurt the economy, like an environmental cap and trade regulation plan.
How do you think his current plan will work out?
Well, I mean, I think my concern is that it's hard to point to an example where a plan like the one Obama is proposing has really worked. They talk about a new deal, and it's very debatable at best whether the new deal brought us out of the Great Depression. I think if you look at the numbers, the answer is no. They tried this kind of high spending agenda to help the economy in Japan in the 1990s. They spent a ton of money on infrastructure. They paved over everything. It didn't work. Japan had a 10-year recession. So I'm not sure why anyone would think this plan, as we currently see it, is going to do a lot to help. I mean, even these tax cuts are not the kind that would really help an economy, which would be lowering tax rates and keeping them down there permanently so people see that, oh, if I do this, if I work hard or invest, I'll have a greater long-term reward. I think those are the kinds of tax cuts that would help. That's not what he's doing. The downturn's been going on for a while, so he just might catch a break and that, eventually, economies begin to grow again under their own power, and maybe he'll catch that break. I just have real concerns whether this plan, even though we're going to spend everything we can, it seems like, whether this by itself is really going to turn around the economy.
James, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Love to do it again.
I'm going to talk about these and other topics, even if the rest of the media refuses to. I'll be back.
Savage.
My emphasis is on driving down the costs, taking on the insurance companies, making sure that they are limited in the ability to extract profits and deny coverage, that we make sure the drug companies have to do what's right by their patients instead of simply hoarding their profits. If we do those things, then I believe that we can drive down the costs for families, and we can save families that do have health insurance about $1,000 a year, and we can also make sure that we provide coverage for everybody else. There are no excuses. If a parent is not providing health care for that child, it's because the parent's not being responsible under my plan, and those children don't have a choice.
Barack Obama spoke a great deal about overhauling the American health care system all throughout the campaign, and now the former Democratic minority leader and former lobbyist Tommy Daschle is being vetted by Congress. Ha, ha, ha. To give us more details on this matter, I'd like to welcome Dr. Robert Moffitt, Director for the Center for Health Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Dr. Moffitt, what can you tell us about the Senate's consideration of Obama's nominees?
I can tell you that the United States Senate is soon going to consider the give its advice and consent to the nomination of former Senator Tom Daschle as the Secretary of the United States Department of Health and Human Services. Daschle appeared before the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. It has been described by the media as a love fest. Media reports have already indicated that Senator Daschle would be the administration's health care czar, and he will play a major role in the reform of the nation's health care system. The Obama administration, the incoming Obama administration, has outlined in some detail, not great detail, but has outlined in some detail a series of policy initiatives that would be designed to change the American healthcare system. One of these policy initiatives is the creation of a new public plan that would compete with private health insurance in a new national pool. And another proposal that is key to the Obama health care reform proposal is the creation of a new federal agency with broad authority to determine the value and effectiveness of medical treatments and procedures as a condition for their reimbursement in public programs and eventually in private health insurance as well. The reason why Senator Daschle's appearance before the Senate is so significant is that Senator Daschle has outlined all of these ideas and has outlined these two ideas in his book, Critical, What We Can Do About the Healthcare Crisis. And two things stand out. First of all, is that the Federal Health Board, the agency that he is going to set up that will affect medical treatments and procedures, is given enormous power in the healthcare system. A very serious question that the Senate has not really probed is that if this board is going to set benefits, is going to make decisions about medical treatments and procedures and the kinds of drugs that will be covered by a government health plan or eventually private health plans, what happens to an individual patient if they're denied a medical treatment or a drug or a procedure as a result of a decision of the board? What would be their recourse? What should they do short of an act of Congress? That question hasn't been clearly answered by Senator Daschle or, for that matter, by the incoming Obama administration. Would there be some kind of an appeals process? Would it look like Medicare? Or would people have to hire a lawyer and go to a federal court? Another key element of the Obama health agenda is the creation of a public plan. The public plan would compete in a national pool with private health plans. But the problem is, could you have a fair competition between a public plan, which is completely subsidized by the taxpayer, where the losses of the plan, the liabilities of the plan, the risks of the plan are assumed by the taxpayer, while for private health insurance, those plans would have to assume all their own risks and absorb their own losses and liabilities. The question here is, could there be a fair competition between public health, a new public health plan like Medicare and private health insurance plans, or would the public plan basically crowd out private health insurance? We have some answers to that question. A leading econometrics firm, the Lewin Group in Washington, D.C., assessed the impact of a public plan on private coverage. They made a range of estimates and based on different types of scenarios, and they concluded that millions of Americans would be either dumped out of their employer-based coverage or enroll in cheaper or enroll in a public plan, meaning that anywhere between 10 and as many as 118 million Americans would be dumped out of private health insurance. That would be a major step toward basically a single-payer health care system. So those are the issues that are right now before the Senate with the hearings for Senator Daschle. He will be considered by the Senate Finance Committee next, and the Senate will render its advice and consent. And this will be the first major congressional consideration of a major figure with implications for health care reform in 2009. In any event, the Senate Finance Committee will now consider Senator Daschle's nomination. Their duty under the Constitution is to render their advice and consent. And part of that duty is to ask serious questions about how the Obama health care plan will directly affect the health care coverage and the health care treatments available to millions of Americans. It's time to get into the details. That's the job of the Senate in its constitutional role. It is important that they are not derelict in their duty. We all have a right to know how these questions are going to be answered. This is Bob Moffitt, and that's it. And back to you, Michael.
Thank you, Robert. Let's just hope the Senate doesn't forget its advise and consent function. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
All right, here's what's on michaelsavage.com, and you're not going to believe this, but the woman head of a group with Hamas ties will pray at the Obama inauguration. That's right. Connection to Hamas, no problem for Obama. A prayer will be offered at the National Cathedral by none other than Ingrid Mattson, the first woman president of the Islamic Society of North America. Say it ain't so, I wish I could. It's going to get much worse, my friends. Do ask, do tell. Well, here's the hidden truth, something you don't see behind the smiley buttons and the shows about style and the nice guys. Sad to tell you, but homosexuals account for 65% of the nearly 12,000 cases of syphilis in the United States in 2007. And according to the CDC, homosexual men are the primary driver of increased syphilis rates overall. So if you want to open up the military to homosexuality, well, I guess you better get ready for a big outbreak of venereal disease. Frightened Bernie is now wearing a bulletproof vest. Oh, that's awful. Terrible. Oh, yes, the government today approved another $350 billion in aid for their friends in the banking industry. May as well use it all up so they can abuse a little bit more of the taxpayer the minute Obama the King is anointed. Speaking of Obama the King on michaelsavage.com, it's the most expensive inauguration in history. How's that for a man of the sheeple? Dems unveil another $825 billion stimulus measure. What? More? Where's that money going to go? Well, all roads lead to Rome, Nancy. Oh, yeah. Ex-FBI agent who inspired The Departed gets 40 years. That's right. Former FBI agent John Connolly was sentenced today to 40 years in prison for the 1982 mob-related killing of a Miami gambling executive. P.S., he was a member of the FBI tipping off mobsters and helping them snuff people out. Bloggers have uncovered possible CNN video fraud in a video report from Gaza that supposedly shows the death and burial of a 12-year-old boy. It turns out to be it's a fraud. Eric Holder will be the new attorney general. Well, he pardoned Mark Rich. He also granted clemency to Puerto Ricans from two militant groups. That shouldn't stop Obama. Wrangle to reintroduce military draft measures. Hey, 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 ho, ho, all the draft has got to go? Ex-member of governor's staff in Ohio has been arrested for prostitution ring. Not being a prostitute, but involved in a prostitution ring. Incidentally, Citibank was the top donor to the Obama inauguration. That's right, nice people at Citibank. Now, the reason they gave the money to Obama is not because they love him so much, but the employees of Citibank received $45 billion in rescue funds in the bailout. Interesting. Waxman, that's the man with the very large nostrils, promises quick action on climate. Hey, Nostrilman, take a look at the weather, schmuck. And then we read today that Obama will be using none other than Upchuck McCain to be his secret weapon in pushing forward the immigration reform, that is granting amnesty to the 20 million illegals, money for global warming when there's global freezing, and so forth and so on. Last note on MichaelSavage.com. I mean, there are many other stories, but I think a very important one for you not to miss is that Michelle Obama's job has been eliminated. Now, how important was Michelle Obama's $300,000 a year job if it was eliminated? I'll let you figure out why she got the job in the first place. Moving on, I've been watching the media coverage of Obama and the team that he's putting together. And I think most of the news outlets should give up on their so-called serious coverage of Obama and just stick to selling those Obama commemorative plates and coins. What if I told you that Barack Obama's top intelligence advisor, John Brennan, worked for a company that was cited by the State Department for breaching sensitive files? Say, spy anyone? Have you heard about this? Well, someone who has been tracking the story is Ken Timmerman from Newsmax.com. Ken, what can you tell us about the story?
You know, Michael, I think this is a potentially huge story that has been swept under the rug by the national media. We've been covering it at Newsmax.com as we've been covering other potential scandals in the upcoming Obama administration. I think the media has shown that they will not report anything that is potentially dispositive about Barack Obama. Here's what actually happened as far as we know right now. In February or March of 2008, a company that was run by John Brennan, who at the time was an unpaid intelligence advisor to Barack Obama, had a contract with the State Department to process some of their passport files. Now, a contract employee working for this company was caught by State Department officials rifling the passport files of the three top presidential candidates, Hillary Clinton, John McCain, and Barack Obama. Now, my sources who follow this very closely from the inside tell me that they believe that the peeking into the McCain and Hillary Clinton files was actually just intended to distract attention from the real goal of the operation, which was to, quote, cauterize the passport file of Barack Obama. Now, the problem is that since this has happened, it was uncovered in March by the State Department. My colleagues at the Washington Times were the first to report on it at the time. And since then, there has been an Inspector General's report from the State Department. We don't know what is any longer still in the Barack Obama file. We don't know if that file, whether its integrity has been breached. Let me tell you the kind of documents that should be in there. There should be obviously the information about who he is, his place of birth, his date of birth, his parents, and all the rest. But there could also be copies of original birth certificates. There could be copies of things like a naturalization certificate in the event that a U.S. citizen had gone gone out of the country, become the citizen of another country, and then wanted to come back into America at the age of 18 or 20 or 21, as we know Barack Obama did, that kind of document could have been in the passport file. We will never know that any longer because the file has been breached. Now, Brennan himself quickly disowned the contract employee who was fired by his company. But as far as I know, he's never been prosecuted. And we have this 100-plus page report from the Inspector General's office of the State Department, which goes into great, great detail of the incident, what actually happened. But, you know, we don't know what's in it because most of that report is classified. I've got a copy that was made available by the State Department, and of 105 pages or so, roughly five of them can be read. All of the rest, 100 pages, have been blacked out, allegedly for security reasons, and we have no way of accessing that, no way of knowing what they actually don't want us to read. Here's what we do know, is that the breach was so serious. The Inspector General of the State Department recommended 22 separate measures that had to be taken in order to make those passport files secure in the future. When you compare the attention that was paid to the story, which was close to zero in the national media, to 1992 when Bill Clinton's passport file was breached by a Republican operative in the State Department, I think you get a better feel for what's really at stake here. Now, you know, Michael, some people have asked me whether anyone else is going to be picking up on this story, if I expect ABC News or CNN to be running investigative reports on the breach of Obama's passport file. I think you know the answer to that as well as anybody else. There's not a chance, a snowball's chance in hell of that happening. The national media simply doesn't want this kind of story out. Barack Obama is the anointed one, and who cares about the Constitution or whether he is constitutionally eligible for office? I might mention one other thing of significance about John Brennan, Obama's top advisor on intelligence issues. He was the man, again, who was in charge of the company that whose employee breached the passport files. Brennan now is going to be at the White House with Obama, advising him on intelligence issues. He earlier had been mentioned as a possible nominee for to head the CIA, but we're told by the Obama team that Obama's left-wing supporters didn't like Brennan's past association as a top official at the CIA because he had been there when they had so-called tortured terrorist detainees. And so because of that, they couldn't put him up for nomination. I happen to think that that's a smokescreen, and that the real reason Obama did not put John Brennan at the head of CIA was because of his involvement in the passport file. He didn't want that to become public during Senate confirmation hearings, and also because of Brennan's quite controversial opinions about Hezbollah and Hamas and the Islamic Republic of Iran. He has, in fact, written in an article that appeared in an obscure policy journal this past July that the U.S. should recognize Hamas and Hezbollah, which are terrorist organizations, and that the a new administration under Obama should actually negotiate with these organizations in addition to negotiating with Iran. He talks about, quote, strategic patience rather than engaging in bellicose rhetoric and coercive diplomacy with Iran. I think that those are things also that would have landed John Brennan in a great deal of trouble had he come up for confirmation in the U.S. Senate. This is Ken Timmerman in Washington. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Ken. Keep up the good work. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yesterday, we saw Bernie Madoff go to court in a Kevlar vest and come back a free man, free to enjoy the pleasures of a $7 million Manhattan apartment with its terrace and luxurious appointments. All courtesy of the billions he built from investors, apparently. He's not going to jail, and neither are the other Wall Street hucksters that scammed America. The CEOs of companies like Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, who are the beneficiaries of hundreds of billions of dollars from you, the taxpayer, they don't have reporters standing outside of their front doors, but you know they need to be exposed, just like Bernie Madoff. On top of the billions that Bush used to socialize the U.S. economy, on top of the $25 billion that B of A is already receiving for the first bailout, they're going to receive yet another aid package that contains billions more. Robert Rubin, economic advisor to Obama, just cashed out at Citigroup after earning $115 million. How's that for a guy who crashed the company into the ground? How's that for a golden parachute? And those are just two companies. Like an iceberg, we see relatively little of this financial finagling above the surface. For every Bernie Madoff, there are a dozen others like him who have built billions. For every Robert Rubin, there are a dozen economic advisors who have parlayed their insider status to enormous wealth. And yet it's only Bernie Madoff that has helicopters circling over his apartment building. The media should know, the media should be on the door of Robert Rubin, in my opinion, of Henry Paulson, our Treasury Secretary, of Larry Summers, of CEO Kenneth Lewis of the Bank of America for having bought Merrill Lynch without having done due diligence. Of all of these men, they should all be asked, where is the taxpayers' money? But we've talked enough about this. I woke up last night at about 4 a.m. I couldn't sleep. I heard a rumbling in the sky, and I know what that low rumbling in the sky means. I know that the gigantic bombers are on the move. They're coming out of the Air Force Base near Sacramento. I didn't have to read about it in the paper today. I just know they're moving them. I don't know where they're moving them. I don't know how many were being moved, but I heard the low rumble in the sky at 4 a.m. And I said, thank God something's going on behind the scenes because this is getting out of control. It's astonishing to me what a group of hollow men we have running this country. And then I couldn't sleep. I couldn't get back to sleep after I heard that low rumble because things are very terrifying right now if you really listen carefully. You don't have to put your ear to the ground to know what's going on in this world. All you got to do is take your blinders off, get your eyes off YouTube, get your eyes off pornography, and get your eyes off, you know, the latest lingerie on YouTube. Stop listening to Moloch's madnesses and start looking at what's going on in your world. And I sat down and I wrote this. Take it for what it is. I wrote this down. I said, I met with my kitchen cabinet last night while cooking a light dinner. As I drank the Bordeaux, I consulted with my chief advisor, Teddy, a 10-pound gray poodle. In my kitchen cabinet with us were Plato, Moses, Jesus, John Locke, George Washington, Lincoln, Patton, and God. Here's what my kitchen cabinet recommended for rescuing America. I wrote out a 4-page plan. You think I'm just a funny guy, huh? Let's start with my plan for rescuing America. Page 1, domestic, A. Cut federal income taxes by 2% per year over 4 years for a minimum total of 8% over 4 years. B, reduce federal government departments in size by 4% each year for a total reduction of size by 16% over 4 years. C, eliminate all public assistance for able-bodied recipients. Cut off all public assistance for immigrants for 5 years. Repatriate those who are not working after 2 years. D, immediately impose tariffs on cars and trucks owned by foreign entities, even if they're manufactured in America. E, cause illegal aliens to build a wall between the United States and Mexico, and then repatriate them. Pay them a one-time worker fee. F, increase pay for active duty combat troops by 10%. Number 2, fire any unmarried military person becoming pregnant while on active duty. Shall I continue? I will, whether you want me to or not. Here's the rest of my domestic policy for saving or rescuing America. G, make abortions illegal except when the physical survival of the mother is threatened, to be determined by 3 medical doctors. Number 2 in that category, require a NORPLAN for all women on welfare of childbearing age. H, close all houses of sex and massage. I, expand the DEA while decriminalizing most drugs. J, regarding the media. 1, eliminate all foreign ownership of any American media entity. 2, break up overly large conglomerates like News Corporation. K, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. Create a marriage incentive through lower taxes for married heterosexual couples and a government subsidy for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. L, repatriate all illegal immigrants now incarcerated. Encourage all other illegals to self-repatriate through double taxation on wages and fines on employers. This is Michael Savage. I'll go on with my international program for rescuing America. I'm sure that most of you would turn the program off. You'd rather listen to the hollow men in the media. Go ahead and listen. I don't care anymore. We've got a hollow, empty suit wanting to run the country, and the only people who can save this country have been silenced by the media bosses. So I'll go on with my international plan for rescuing this great nation. International, A, Iraq. It'll be Iraq, Iran, North Korea, Israel, China, the United Nations. Here it comes. A, Iraq. One, cordon off the Sunni triangle. Give the people 72 hours to leave. Reduce the entire sector to rubble with an aerial campaign. Send in Iraqi troops to mop up pockets of resistance. Emphasis, Iraqi troops to mop up pockets of resistance. Two, divide Iraq into 3 to 4 sectors. Sunni, Shiite, Kurd, and international. Next, remove all U.S. troops after above achieved. B, Iran. One, sanctions, embargoes, and mine their harbors. Nothing goes in, nothing comes out. C, North Korea. Destroy their launching platforms. Impose a naval blockade on all goods coming in or out except food. D, Israel, Arab entities. Give Israel 4 years to become self-sufficient. Cut off all foreign aid to all nations. E, China. 20% tariffs on all China-made goods immediately. Rising by 5% each year for each year China refuses to revalue the currency. F, United Nations. Withdraw immediately. Remove all diplomats and staff. Convert the United Nations building into housing for the working poor. G, Mexico. Force Mexico to pay one barrel of oil for every illegal alien in the United States of America per month. I'm Michael Savage. I approve of this message.
I mean, people will look back and put this administration in perspective to those that have come before me and those that will come after me. And they will analyze whether or not decisions I made made the country safer and more secure.
So, Bush's farewell speech. Why should I sit here and cover it? This is something I've covered for years. You know Bush's legacy. You know about how he crashed the economy, how he socialized the banks, how he socialized medicine, how he bailed out Africa with AIDS money, how he tried to destroy our borders but didn't succeed quite yet, how he almost destroyed our port security by giving away the port security contracts to his friends in Dubai. And, of course, he probably destroyed the Republican Party. And so tonight he gets on the TV and says goodbye to the American people. Well, goodbye, Mr. Bush. I know there are those of you who will proclaim till his last minute in office that this was a real conservative, that he did the best he could. You're wrong. He is perhaps the most deceptive president this country has ever had. He has drained our resources, drained our treasury, drained our national morale, and now he has the gall to come on TV and act as if conservative Americans are actually going to miss him. No, not me. Maybe Hush Bimbo, but not Michael Savage. Don't get me wrong. I don't have any real hope that Obama will rescue us with his particular brand of extreme socialism. Maybe he'll take real action on the terrorists. But what we do know is that he wants to finish the job of socializing America that GW started. But Bush still decides to get up there. He still thinks America loves him. This is unbelievable to me. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.